You're listening to CGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Hello, this is Rabble Radio, recorded on Friday, June 12th, 2026. I'm your host, Breanne Doyle. Rabble.ca shares the news of the day through a progressive lens. If you're curious about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us. Thanks for tuning in. On the show, Rabble editor Nick Seabrook and publisher Sarah Sahagian sit down to discuss ongoing news coverage on Rabble.ca this summer, including the Canada-US-Mexico Agreement, CUSMA, the war in Iran, Pride Month coverage, and more. Here are Nick and Sarah in conversation. Take a listen.
All right, I'm with Rabble publisher Sarah Sahagian. Sarah, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, of course, you know, June is a very notable month. It is, of course, Indigenous History Month. Mm-hmm. It is Seniors Month. It is also, of course, Pride Month. So how about we start there?
Absolutely. We already have some great Pride coverage up on the website. Nick, would you like to tell our listeners more?
Yeah, absolutely. We had a great little article for people interested in adding to their summer reading list of some books to read up on this Pride Month. Books include titles like All Hookers Go to Heaven, Crooked Teeth, A Body More Tolerable, and all of these are books by queer authors covering issues like being a queer immigrant, being queer in the sex working industry, as well as transgender issues and the transgender experience. So, you know, we don't just share hard news here on Rabble. One thing I love is that we do share some of these more fun items that cover things like summer reading and book reviews. So hope everyone gets a chance to take a look at that. And speaking of book reviews, you know, we don't just recommend books for you to read. Sometimes we give you a little bit more of an insight into what some of these great books contain. And our columnist Tom Sanborn had a really lovely book review about Betty Baxter. Betty Baxter published her autobiography earlier this year in March called Outspoken. Betty Baxter, for those of you who don't know, was a gay athlete, a gay Canadian athlete who was forced out, fired from her job as a coach for a women's volleyball team in 1981, but went on to help found the Gay Games, which was first held in 1990. Really an inspiring story. And most recently on the site, I just want to also highlight, is a story by one of our board members, Scott Jacobson, who is currently in Ukraine and is doing some wonderful coverage for us from Ukraine. And yesterday, from the time of recording, we published a piece from him where he has a Q&A discussion with Saba Yamani. Saba is a gay immigrant from Saudi Arabia to Ukraine. They're involved with local pride events such as Kyiv Pride, and they talked about discrimination that the gay and queer community still experiences in Ukraine, about what it's like to be part of that community in a war zone, as well as trying to continue to hold important events that really highlight activism and celebrate the queer community, like Pride events, during wartime conditions. Sarah, what are your thoughts on some of these stories?
I love the diversity of coverage that we've had over the last few months. We're producing more about arts and culture. I mean, obviously, everyone should read the reporting that Scott is producing from Ukraine, which is pretty remarkable. He is in Ukraine, so it's on, boots on the ground reporting. That kind of reporting from a war zone is so dangerous, but also so valuable. So may we commend him on that. And I just think that everything we've been producing lately is a testament to how wonderful Rabble is as a publication. I don't want to pat us on the back, except I kind of do as our publisher. I want to celebrate. It's our 25th anniversary, and we've been telling stories like that for 25 years. In fact, a friend of mine was just watching the classic documentary, The Corporation, and reminded me that Rabble was a media partner with the corporation. So we have a long history of doing this kind of important reporting. Read all of this. It's all on the website. Everything that we've mentioned, you can access it easily. And it will make you, if you are a progressive person, it's just going to be the kind of news that you want to access and probably don't see a lot of in the media that is not independently owned and operated.
Absolutely. Still going strong after 25 years. And for everyone listening, please visit rabble.ca and check out some of this great coverage that we have for Pride Month and we will have for Indigenous History Month, Seniors Month, all that great stuff. We will have more coverage from our board member, Scott Jacobson, who's in Ukraine, who's been sending quite a few bits of content that we'll be having up on the site. Now, getting on into some of our other important summer coverage, let's talk about the Canada-US-Mexico Free Trade Agreement, because the review for that is coming up on July 1st. And of course, ever since Trump came into office, there's been a lot of tariffs against Canada. It's been affecting our economy. It's been affecting the U.S. economy. And there is no agreement yet coming out of what to do about these tariffs going into this renegotiation. Sarah, can I get your early thoughts on CUSMA, tariffs, and where we're at?
So I'm proud to say that we have been reporting on CUSMA for a while. We understood that this was an emerging story, and I feel like I've been giving it the attention that it really deserves from the left. For a variety of reasons, it is an issue that the left should care about. There are still critics of free trade at all. There are other people on the left who say, you know, you can't unscramble an egg, so let's see how this gets renegotiated to best protect workers. So there are lots of different viewpoints, but it is important to cover regardless. We've had some really good pieces. I mean, Evan Wexler has done some very interesting reporting on it. And I mean, I think what we're realizing right now is we have no idea how this is going to go, right? We have no idea if it looks like it will succeed or not. I mean, there's a lot of reason to believe that it will, but also it seems like the U.S. is not in a hurry to negotiate something with Canada. And Canada is kind of being, I would say, treated like the unpopular kid at school. They're not invited to the table. Do you want to speak a little bit more about that, Nick? We've seen some sort of signs that I don't know if this is a negotiation tactic that Trump is trying to use or he just straight up detests Canada. It's probably both.
Well, let me dive a little bit deeper into the ins and outs of this story, because as listeners will read in Evan's coverage, that Canada was one of the few nations to push back on tariffs from Donald Trump. Donald Trump, when he came into office, put tariffs on almost every country in the world. Most countries very quickly folded to a lot of U.S. demands and wound up with an agreement that reduced those tariffs. They didn't get them back to zero, but reduced them. And it seems like the approach of the Mark Carney government is that a lot of these countries got a bad deal, and Canada has been pushing back on a lot of the demands from the U.S. in that they're asking for to renegotiate CUSMA and also get these tariffs removed. And we know that bullies don't like to be stood up to. And I think that that is part of why you're seeing so much aggression and acrimony out of the U.S. U.S. trade. Lead trade negotiator for CUSMA, Jameson Greer, has called Canada very difficult. He criticized Canada just this past week for continuing to have counter tariffs against the U.S. So all of this is informed into the conversation. And just so everyone knows that the tariffs, you know, they're on items in the Canadian economy like steel and aluminum. Those are the very big ones. And there are other items covered by the Canada-US-Mexico Free Trade Agreement that are exempt from those tariffs. But if the trade agreement isn't renewed, then those items could be tariffed as well. And that is why we're coming up on the renegotiating of the trade agreement, which was built in. Trump signed this trade agreement. And now he says it's the worst thing in the world. He's the one who signed it 5 years ago or 6 years ago, and it was scheduled to come up for renegotiation this year, regardless of who was in the White House. And if all sides decide they aren't going to continue with it, it will still be a number of months before it is completely no longer in effect. So that's kind of where we're at right now. Sarah, what are your thoughts on our coverage on this? And what are some of the other angles to this story that you think we might be continuing to take a look at as the summer goes on?
I think it's very important for us to be looking at how anything to do with tariffs, as well as CUSMA specifically, is impacting the workers, such as steel workers and auto sector workers. And that's something that we are committed to covering as the summer goes on. We're going to see, I think, a lot of very interesting activism from those communities this summer, it seems like. So that's something that we have our eye on. It's also just important to note that, I mean, Trump did put in the sunset clause, which now, as you said, he says this agreement is terrible. But that was quite clever, because it does seem like if this agreement keeps expiring every 5 years, the U.S., as the largest economy out of the three, is going to have a lot of power to get concessions each time. So it will be fascinating to see what kind of concessions they get and how bad those are for the Canadian economy. I know that from everything we've read, it seems like there are some areas where Trump wants greater access to the Canadian economy or for the U.S., such as the dairy sector. They would like that to be opened up, and that's a sticking point, as well as banking. Banking is another sticking point. Our banking sector in Canada is kind of the envy of the world. As socialists and progressives, we can critique banking and big banks, but also our big banks, by capitalist standards, operate very profitably. And it's a market where the U.S. doesn't really have a lot of access here, but Canadian banks have had a ton of success in the United States over the last 20 years. And I think that that is something that for a lot of Americans who are in the know about this and realize that TD stands for Toronto Dominion, they have an issue with. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what concessions they really fight hard for when they come to the table. If they come to the table, it'll be interesting to see what are the sticking points. What do you think the sticking points are going to be?
Well, I think, I have talked to a friend of ours, a friend of Rabble's, economist Jim Stanford, who he's talked about sticking points like auto, the pressures of AI that are having on all economies right now. And also, just the fact that the basic premise around this whole dispute is, dubious at best. It comes from the president of the United States, who maybe doesn't have quite the best grasp on cause and effect as far as the economy goes. And, I do think that that's part of the problem. Donald Trump just yesterday shared a story from Reuters where he talked about how the U.S. trade deficit is the highest it's ever been. He seemed to not understand that that was a bad thing for his country. He also said today that as inflation reached its highest point in 3 years in the U.S., that he loves inflation. So on the other side of the negotiating table, we might not be dealing with someone who's playing chess to our checkers necessarily. I will also say, in terms of ongoing coverage of this issue, we will, of course, be focusing on the labor angle. Labor is so important to everything we do here at Rabble. We'll continue to focus on our labor coverage, as well as talking about some important historical context, because free trade has been a very key issue, a historic issue on the progressive left for many decades. Going back to the 1980s and the original reaction to the free trade campaigns of that decade that led eventually to the more well-known NAFTA and the current CUSMA agreements, the progressive left very much coalesced around that issue, opposing free trade. And our founder, Judy Rebick, had a really great piece on Rabble earlier this year, or maybe it was late last year. We published quite a lot of content, so I don't always remember when things come out. But she had a very prescient piece where she talked about, we were right. When it came to the tariffs and free trade, those of us who were warning about the consequences of these things on the progressive left back in the 1980s were right. And Rabble, I personally talked to economist Marjorie Cohen and Judy Rebick and Jim Stanford, just to do a little bit of history to share of how, the fight has changed from what was in the 1980s, but just how that really much still informs how many on the progressive left still feel about free trade overall, that it was a road maybe that we should not have ever taken.
Fair enough. And you know what? They must feel pretty validated right now. They were absolutely right. Whether or not we can walk it back easily at this point. I mean, we couldn't walk it back easily, but everybody was right. They made good points. There were good points then. There are good points now. I think they've won that. History has shown they've won that debate. But, it sometimes is cold comfort when you're right, because disastrous things could happen. So we will be there to cover this story as it develops. We know this is going to be a big story over the summer. We also, I just wanted to mention that recent data shows that Canada is now in a technical recession. So trade and how we develop our economy going forward is incredibly important. It's always important, but it just, we should be mindful of the fact that when your economy is shrinking, there are actual human beings who are affected by that. One interesting thing is that GDP per capita did go up slightly, not a huge amount, and also inflation is still a factor. So I don't really think people actually have more money in their pockets, but some economists will say it's not as bad as people think because GDP per capita went up. It's still not a great picture. I think everyone agrees Canada's economy is at best soft. And of course, we will be covering this issue from the perspective of the workers, of the actual human beings who live and work in this country.
In the little bit of time that we have left, we still got a few minutes, but let's talk about some of the other stories we're going to be looking to cover over the course of the summer. So our listeners are informed as to what to expect and what to get excited for. Of course, Trump, as long as he's still walking this earth, I think will be a significant issue for us to cover. There's the ongoing war with Iran, which I don't think is going to end anytime before November. And all of this, of course, Kuzma, Iran, Trump, is tied into the rising cost of living.
Absolutely. So the Iran war is definitely a story that we're going to be following this summer. It's developing into a real quagmire because fundamentally, Donald Trump has proven himself to be a leader who does not want to negotiate in good faith. He has certain sticking points that he's not willing to compromise on. What they are seems to change all the time, what he wants. And it's fascinating because we're actually seeing the rise of, I would say, what we have is a bipolar world, because China has been very vocally against the war, and Chinese officials have given speeches about how they feel it is illegal, how they feel it's bad for the war. So that's going to be fascinating to see how that relationship between China and the US plays out with the backdrop of the war in Iran, because that is something where China is very invested. China is not an oil producing country. And China actually does typically at any given point have 6 months of oil reserves just in case something like this happens. But that does run out eventually. And obviously they've found other ways to get oil, but the price of oil is going up and everybody in the world is upset about that. So we're seeing that this war is actually a time when the hegemonic changes that I actually think have already occurred in the world. I think we already were living in a bipolar world, but they're becoming more obvious and more apparent. So China's presence on the world stage is now, I think, more obvious to people who weren't following its rise as closely as, you know, people who work in a newsroom.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that this war, in terms of someone who's a big history fan, harkens back to maybe other conflicts that signaled cracks in the foundation of large superpower empires. You know, thinking about the British, you know, thinking about the Soviets in Afghanistan, things like that, you know, just going throughout history of, you know, maybe an empire picking a fight with a much smaller nation and biting off more than it could chew. And we'll see how that develops. I think it'll be the key story of 2026, because it, like I said, it's not going to end anytime soon. It's going to continue, I think, at least until the midterms in November, because the Iranians know that that's a pain point for Trump and they want to inflict as much pain on the US president as possible. Before I let you go, Sarah, there's one more thing I wanted to talk about, something I'm very excited about, something I'm very happy that we've been starting to do here at Rabble, is that we've brought on a few interns to our little team. Can you tell us a little bit about how this came about?
Okay, so we have three fabulous interns, Hannah, Leah, and Piper. They're all from Humber Polytechnic. And We were able to secure interns because we were working with one of our lovely board members, Sadaf Hassan, who is a prof at Humber Polytechnic. So all of our interns come from Humber's wonderful professional writing program. We have them doing lots of cool stories. So if you see stories by Leah, Piper, or Hannah on Rabble, please click. They're very interesting. They're talking about everything from disability advocates that you should know to Indigenous films that you should be watching, and a host more stories that they're covering. So we're very proud to have this program. We have had interns in the past, but it's been a while for us. So this is a momentous occasion, and it's one of the ways we are celebrating our 25th anniversary by trying to give back and resurrecting this internship program.
Please continue to listen and read Rabble throughout the summer. Support our work by going to rabble.ca/donate. We can't continue doing the work that we do without your regular support. So please visit rabble.ca/donate and consider becoming a monthly donor. Again, very much appreciated. And Sarah, thank you so much for this great conversation today.
Thank you, Nick. Have a great day.
You too.
Was Rabble editor Nick Seabrook and Rabble publisher Sarah Sahagian in conversation. Thank you so much for that, Nick and Sarah. And now, this is our In Case You Missed It segment, where we review the top stories from this week on Rabble.ca. To do that, let's hand things back over to Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Back to you, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. Starting with labor news. The NDP and labor leaders held a press conference on Parliament Hill this week, calling on the Liberal government to pass Bill C-248. Bill C-248 would close a loophole in Canada's Labour Code. Under the Canada Labour Code, employers are barred from bringing in workers from another work location to work a site experiencing a labour dispute. In this way, employers cannot, for example, bring workers from one factory into work at another factory experiencing a strike. However, there is an exception currently in the Canada Labour Code for employees classified as managers. Managers are allowed to be transferred from one work site to another, regardless if there is a labour dispute happening at the second site. Bill C-248 closes this loophole. United Steelworkers National Director Marty Warren spoke in favor of the legislation, saying, quote, "A law designed to protect the right to strike that allows employers to bypass it is not strong enough and must be fixed. If employers can keep operations running by shifting work outside the bargaining unit, workers' leverage is weakened and disputes go on and on and on." End quote. Also this week, in a column on Rabble, Canadian Women's Chamber of Commerce President Nancy Wilson discusses the imbalanced influence that large corporations have on government policy. The majority of corporations in Canada are small to medium-sized businesses, but the views of the largest corporations are often the ones that are consulted when government holds public consultation. Wilson points out that every year, the federal government holds public consultations ahead of announcing the annual budget, and every year is the same few large corporations that are invited to the hearings. Likewise, the Canadian Chamber of Commerce seems to prioritize the opinions of its larger members. Wilson says that there is nothing wrong with larger employers having their opinions heard, but more diverse views should also be considered when forming policy. In world news, Rabble board member Scott Jacobson is in Ukraine and is doing some on-the-ground reporting. For Pride Month, he interviewed Saba Yamani, a 2SLGBTQIA+ woman who was born in Saudi Arabia and raised in Ukraine. They discussed what it is like being queer in a conservative country, holding Pride events in Kyiv, and what it's like living in a war zone. Yamani explained how, while it is possible to be more open in modern Ukraine, that it still came with risks, saying, quote, "Being queer in Ukraine, especially in Kyiv, is less stigmatized than it used to be. We can express ourselves openly. That also makes it easier for hostile people to identify us." In 2019, people took photos at Pride and later targeted those individuals. End quote. Read the full transcript of the discussion between Scott and Saba on Rabble.ca today. Staying in world news, the human rights organization UNICEF issued a recent report highlighting forced labor and child labor in countries around the world. In its most recent reporting, UNICEF states that there are over 138 million child laborers in the world. In Sierra Leone, nearly 1 in 5 children are engaged in child labor. Canada does have laws that prohibit companies operating within its borders from having supply chains that rely on any form of child labor. The enforcement of those laws, however, is rather lax. In an article on Rabble, parliamentary reporter Carl Nirenberg explained that companies must submit reports every year on their supply chains to show that they are not using forced labor, but that these reports are often generic, unspecific, and hard to verify. The law does allow the government to perform inspections, but Nirenberg notes that to date, there have been no reports of any inspections taking place. And finally, in Indigenous news, Indigenous and First Nations groups in BC are warning the government of Premier David Eby not to amend DRIPA. DRIPA, or the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples Act, was passed in 2019. The law affirms that the laws of BC must adhere to the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Using DRIPA, the Cowichan tribes successfully argued in court in 2025 that they had title to a parcel of land on the southern arm of the Fraser River in Richmond, BC. The NDP government opposed this ruling, and Premier Eby said this past spring that he would be seeking to amend DRIPA to block further court decisions like this one. Over 100 First Nations publicly objected to the Eby government's move to amend DRIPA, as did the Law Society of BC and the BC branch of the Canadian Bar Association. Over 130 civil society organizations, including the BC Federation of Labor and the BC Civil Liberties Association, publicly called on the government to stop their attempts to amend DRIPA. As always, you can read the full versions of all the stories we talked about today on Rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. On a personal note, listeners, this is my final episode as the host, editor, and producer of Rabble Radio and Rabble's podcast network. It's been a pleasure connecting with you folks across the country since taking on this role in October of 2021, and I will carry with me very fond memories of my time as your weekly host. You're in good hands with Nick Seabrook as the new host of Rabble Radio. I'll also mention that over the next 11 weeks, Rabble Radio will be sharing re-released episodes from Rabble's archives as we mark 25 years of Rabble.ca. New interviews will return in September. Speaking of Rabble.ca celebrating 25 years, please consider supporting Rabble today by visiting rabble.ca/donate or by subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. You can also choose to subscribe to us over on Patreon for special bonus content of Rabble Radio. Already this month, we've shared 2 bonus episodes that you won't hear anywhere else. Visit us today on patreon.com/rabble. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music to this episode. Finally, as always, a thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, for the last time, signing off.